Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. This morning, we're going to talk about financial awareness. Not how to buy, not how to sell, not how to invest, but to be aware, because you'll have two times in life to be aware of this. And we're going to make more sense of that later, but this is a show on precaution and expertise. Expertise side, Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner for over 30 years, co-founder, Schaefer Financial, former chair of the United States Certified Financial Planners Board of Standards. I know I probably didn't say that right, but was I close?
You are really close, and it's great to be here, Bob.
Yeah, great to have you. All right, so this, not mystery, but two times in life. As we speak today, many of us are starting to or caring for elder parents, and sometimes as they age, they might not do things that are financially astute. I'm not talking about investing, just really bad investing, and for us to be aware of that now before they're unapproachable, as well as a second chance in life, how can we guard ourselves against our potential to do this? So teach us, teach.
Well, really, Bob, this is such an important topic because what we're finding is that as people are living longer, the population is definitely aging, but we're not always living every single day of our lives with the competence to make sound financial decisions. And so lawyers have known for a long time we should have some documents in place. If I can't make my own decisions, who will make them for me? But as a practical matter, sometimes those documents really don't work, and we should practice with them when we still have the ability to practice with them. So, for example, if mom is just disinterested in money, dad did everything, and she's just never really had to pay much attention to this, it's not required by law that somebody look over her shoulder and help her at all, but she really may be missing an awful lot of really simple, good decisions to make. And if I don't have any authority, I don't have her, I'm not her agent under her power of attorney, or I'm not her successor trustee in her revocable living trust, I may not even be aware that she's missing quarterly tax payments or failing to pay the homeowner's insurance because it got missed in some paperwork that dad had and it's not being escrowed. And really, by the time I find out, we've all spent the week with her in ICU, and she's not able to talk to me about it. I'm emotionally spent, and now I'm uncovering headaches. So the best advice I could give anybody is, while we still can, let's have conversations with our seniors. Let's get good documents in place, and how about a paperwork fire drill? Let's practice with it.
Okay, I like your example of, again, mom, but what if dad is still alive? Mm-hmm. And again, not that the male is always the one that handles the money, but in this case, that was the example.
Sure.
And dad, let's say, was very good managing money over the lifetime, and no reason ever question.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, money's being shipped overseas to some great deal and wherever, and it wipes out the cash.
Right.
And we got a great tax loss, but somehow a dollar of a tax loss doesn't exactly equate to a dollar of spending. And all of a sudden this comes up and they have to sell the house and move into something less desirable. And fortunately, a lot of the people that are listening do have a federal pension, so at least there's something coming in. But how does the one spouse then pay more attention to it, or do we look for signs?
We absolutely have to look for signs. And one of the things I think all of us should just be aware of is that as we age, we'll become a little bit more trusting, even if there's not an official diagnosis of dementia, that as we age, it seems to be a pattern of becoming more trusting, and our judgment call becomes a little too friendly and a little bit too susceptible to the deal, the scam, the con artist. So we see this an awful lot with senior citizens giving to charities they don't know anything about, or buying things that they don't need, or constantly giving money to the ne'er-do-well family member that everybody else can see. Are you kidding me? For the right, come on, you have to see this, and they don't see it. So what I suggest to people is that well before there's a reason to, so before you think mom's making mistakes, or before you think dad is getting a little bit too free with the checkbook, have the conversation. Or if my client is the senior, as I call them, been retired for 10, 15 years, and everything's going great, I always ask, so if I couldn't talk to you about your finances, who should I be talking to? And have you made that official? And can they come to a meeting so that I get to know the second in command before I'm a little concerned that my client's given away money, or that we're seeing, you know, they're calling and with requests for withdrawals that we just know this isn't like them at all. This is, I have permission now to bring in that hopefully slightly younger and a little bit more competent person. You have to do it before there's a need. And the need's going to come with advancing age and or failing health, or that wonderful combination of both. So before I'm at an advanced age, before I have my health failing completely, I need to identify who's my chain of command, and I should introduce that person to my advisors. So if I have a financial planner, if I have a CPA or tax preparer, I have to give those advisors permission to work with my chosen successor.
Okay. Now, I've got another situation where the one spouse handled the money, but maybe doesn't handle it as well, and is too embarrassed to tell the other that I can't find this chunk of money, and I don't think I threw it away, and I know I didn't spend it, but I can't find it. But they're embarrassed, and the other spouse feels uneasy about challenging it.
So did you ever think when you were choosing your profession, Bob, that you would need to go back and get that master's degree in counseling or that therapist?
I got a street degree in that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what happens. And, you know, we're in the people business, but I coach families too all the time too. The more the family culture can be one of sharing information and conversation, the less likely we're going to get backed into those corners where people really feel there's no action item. You know, that they're embarrassed. Well, I know, but we still have to talk about it. It's hard to teach somebody how to have those awkward conversations for the first time at 85. But if we've been having the conversations since the retirement party at 65, then we usually have uncovered little clues, or we've started to see that dad's getting a little nervous. I'm working with a senior family member right now who, you know, bright guy, paid every bill, always had good questions. And now what he's doing is getting the bills all ready and stapling it together and not mailing it. Really? Are you sure that's where this is all going to fall apart? And it is. But because for the last 10 years, we've at least been looking over his shoulder a little bit and had somebody who was physically close, you know, hey, can you be stopping in? We got him to agree that maybe it's just time for your local son to just once a week come in, and we'll just let him pick up all the paperwork. And I'm sure if we hadn't had those conversations for the past 10 years constantly about, so how's it going? How's your routine? What are the bills like? We probably would have been faced with a leave me a little expletive alone. Yeah. This is none of your business.
Okay. Now let's go there. If there's a document somewhere, that person could be, quote, I'm going to say forced to back off, but isn't that then subject to one, two, or three docs saying this person is not capable of doing this?
Yes and no. And okay, so here, let's just talk about what the documents really are and what they can do and how to avoid having great documents that don't work for you. Okay.
Okay.
So we have two kinds of documents that allow us to have a little chain of command. If I'm not competent to make my own decisions, or heck, just don't feel like it, right? I, at a minimum, should have given somebody my power of attorney. Simple concept, right? I want you, Bob, to make decisions for me if and when I can't. And I want those, that authority to stay in effect even if I'm not competent. That makes it a durable power of attorney. And then I can name my, you, and if you can't serve, your lovely wife, Nancy, and if she can't serve, let's just, you know, this is how you'll find somebody. And a good lawyer is going to draft it in a way that it really gives you the ability to do whatever the heck you need to do. Obviously, I wouldn't even think about giving you this authority if you weren't trustworthy, because you have my financial life in your hands. And that is a stumbling block for some people. They know their family members too well, and they just, I couldn't possibly trust this person. But I always explain, if you don't do this, if you don't at least do this, a judge who doesn't know you is going to name one of those family members. So, or is going to name a professional who's going to charge $500 an hour to do pretty simple things like make sure your Pepco bill gets paid. So maybe it's not ideal, but who do you know that has some common sense and integrity? I hope we didn't narrow the field too much there. Let's get these powers of attorney in place. So that's, and they're simple. They're inexpensive. Good lawyers won't let you just get your will done without also giving you a package price for throwing in this power of attorney. So it's a very simple concept. The problem with it is if you don't practice using it before you need to, financial institutions really feel that they shouldn't honor these things. The account is still in Karen Schaefer's name. It's not in your name. And you're coming in trying to do something for Karen Schaefer. Sure. Who the heck are you? So I always suggest to people, you don't just get the document done. You talk about it and you practice using it. Go to the bank. Go to the brokerage firm. Make sure your CPA knows that this person might someday be bringing in the boatload of tax information.
Great. We have somebody clairvoyant on the phone because we haven't given out the phone number. But okay, anyway, good morning.
That's because I'm a loyal listener.
Excellent.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, listen, I don't know whether this question is for you, Bob, or for your guest. But, you know, a coworker in our office committed a suicide at a ripe old age of 50. And so he was divorced, and he has two daughters who are in college. What kind of advice can be given to this family at this stage in life in terms of estate planning or whatever? How can they handle it best?
Was there none done prior to the passing?
No, nothing done.
Mm-hmm.
No,
that's a little rough. I think this might be a better Karen question.
It's so sad. Well, you know, obviously somebody was in terrible pain, and now the family's going to be in pain. What I always suggest to people who are in the throes of grieving and with no notice whatsoever really get thrust into an adult world that has some pretty painful and extensive paperwork and big decisions to make is that they enlist a trusted friend or family member to help them just get their situation organized. A good financial planner, certainly certified financial planners, all have taken courses in estate planning and have mastered at least the rudimentary part of the topic so they can explain to a family, this is where you are right now. This is what's likely to happen. And if there's anything that's particularly complicated, they'll probably be able to refer the family to the right kind of lawyer to help them, because sometimes things do snag. What happens when somebody dies without any plan is that the state in which they reside has a plan for them. You know, there are laws that say, okay, you get this, and divorced people don't get much. And all of that is prescribed. But, you know, sometimes kids might be chronologically adult, but they're not really adult. And so a trusted friend or family member who can go to meetings with them and help them with a little bit more wisdom, ask the right questions, a good financial planner is a really good place to start.
In terms, Bob, since you are so knowledgeable of federal matters, is there anything that this family should know about the federal benefit side of it, you know?
Well, the federal benefit with this situation happening at 50, depending on how many years they had in service.
He was vested, fully vested.
He was fully vested. There would be there would be an annuity, and if I'm not mistaken, there would be for the children if they were under a certain age.
No, they are both adults.
Okay, so, well, there's probably...
And he's divorced.
And divorce is also final, yeah.
So there's a certain amount of the pension that's going to come back. The thrift savings plan is going to go to the named beneficiary.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of death benefit for somebody dies in service. So there clearly are benefits that that will go to survivors, and it'll be a matter of state laws.
You know, Bob, would it help this family to talk to, not necessarily Tammy, but someone like that?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
And I don't want to sound like we're being self-serving, but the answer is yes, and certainly could email us in give us a call.
All right. Thank you so much for all the wonderful thing you do for us.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for these tough questions, but certainly pertinent questions.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And by the way, our phone number is 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. All righty, now let's get back to where we were. That took me off my chair.
Well, I know, but that happens, Bob, and you know, it's sort of like what we're trying to prepare people for is the opposite scenario, so that if we are going to live a long time and we are going to have a period of time where somebody should be making our decisions for us, that we don't leave our families like this sad situation where the family really doesn't know what to do. At least with this family, it will be prescribed. It's sad, it's not pleasant, but it's prescribed. When I'm alive, what happens when I can't make my own decision is not prescribed. So I want to set that up. While I'm having a pretty good day today, I want to say who should make my decisions with that power of attorney. And I want to practice with it. I want to call the bank. I want to call the brokerage firm. I want to ask, what's your policy on accepting powers of attorney? Do you need a copy of it? What if it was signed? My mother is starting her 18th year of dementia. It's not pleasant, but she hasn't given out a legal signature in a long time. If the power of attorney is 18 years old and I'm showing it to a financial institution for the first time, if you worked for that financial institution, would you be willing to say, oh, sure, come on in. Yeah, take all the money. I'm sure you need it by now. Out the door I go? Not likely. So most of these financial institutions have ancillary forms that need to be signed or little hoops to jump through. This is no big deal if I'm doing this all proactively. My mom is still healthy. I'm just double checking with financial institutions to make sure that if and when I need to step in, we've got all the documents in a row. But a power of attorney is going to be a little impractical if mom has a certificate of deposit in every bank in town or several different accounts or a home in Montgomery County, Maryland, and a place at the beach in Delaware and a little piece of the family farm in small town Michigan. That's really just an accident waiting to happen. So the recommendation in that case, when mom's affairs are a little far flung, or dad's, or Uncle Joe's, or eventually my own, maybe it's time to wrap this all up in a revocable living trust. It's going to cost more money. No lawyer's going to throw that in for free. And it's going to take more time, because just getting a lawyer to draft this revocable living trust doesn't mean it's working yet. I got to retitle everything into the trust, which means finding the deed, which means writing a letter of instruction to every financial institution, and then getting forms back and then sending them in again and then seeing somebody's name is spelled wrong. You know, it's a lot of paperwork. But when it's done, my experience is financial institutions are a little more comfortable with those revocable living trusts. Bonus point, once it's all in the trust, eventually the estate settles more easily, because we've done kind of this headache of retitling all up front. So two documents everybody needs to be aware of, and we got to get them in place and practice with them a little bit before anybody is showing some of the signs of mental or emotional incapacity.
Okay, I got a question. Karen, you know all this stuff. Why can't you write the trust?
Yeah, I can get sued enough ways, Bob. Thanks for asking. I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to play a lawyer on the radio. And I certainly don't want to be one in real life if I haven't gone to law school and passed the bar. So there's nothing better than a lawyer who really knows this stuff. And there's nothing better than a potential consumer of legal advice having their thoughts organized and really knowing what they want so that in a very efficient and reasonably priced professional engagement, we get some good documents in place.
Okay. Ditto for CPAs. People say, why can't you do this? And I said, well, because I like being able to eat.
Yeah. So some of the signs that we need to be looking for with ourselves and our seniors might just be signs that we're out of our routine. So, you know, when I was talking about my senior family member, one of the things we noticed is he was just becoming a little more anxious. He was certainly becoming more grumpy. I mean, they make movies about grumpy old men, but, you know, he could usually fake it with most of us. And he was just laying it out there, being Mr. Grumpy Pants. It was enough for us to start, really? Let's look at this paperwork a little bit more. And we were, I must say, shocked. This is a guy who had that bookkeeper bean counter mentality, and he's not putting his bills in the mail.
So. Yeah, engineers generally are very good managing their money. And I've had two cases where terrific, and then all of a sudden, it's gone or can't be found. Now, let's take you and I in the prime of our life, and we have witnessed, we have done it with our own folks. What do we do? Because if parents had it, maybe we got this gene and it just hasn't blossomed yet. What do we do now to protect our loved ones in the future so that I don't become Mr. Grumpy Face and say, no, get out of here?
Right. So I would tell anybody who's in that middle age stage of life that now is the time to be naming somebody to handle your affairs. So at least have given authority to somebody through a power of attorney and actually had a conversation with them. You do know that if something happened to me today and it didn't kill me, but I couldn't make my own financial decisions, that this is where I keep my passwords. This is the extent of my balance sheet. They don't have to know the numbers, but they need to know that I've got some money at this brokerage firm. And they need to know that if I work for Fed, that OPM is going to have some decisions that they're going to have to make. And this is what I like and this is what I hate. And what's beautiful about that is I'm healthy. So if that conversation doesn't go well, I know I've named the wrong person. Or if that person is asking very insightful questions and really is, you know, giving me every indication that they will step up, I've got a little bit of peace of mind here. Now, every few years, I got to rethink that. I'm just at the age where I can finally, there is a God, name my adult children. Where the first time I sat down to do documents, it was all about protecting children. I've got a daughter who will be 32 years old and is as level-headed as they come, a daughter who's 30 who does estate planning for a living. It's time for me to just do a little amendment to the documents I drafted years ago and take out my brother and sister, people who I still know and love and think have integrity and common sense, but they're my age. Right. I need to go back in the family tree a little bit, step down a generation so I can have some peace of mind going forward. I also need to keep an eye on these two and realize that they're not going to get any younger and or that their lives may be busy and demanding. And it may be more practical to name somebody else at some time. But now is the time to put them in as my agents under my power of attorney, as my successor trustees in my revocable living trust.
Very good. I was going to ask you that, and you knew that, I'm sure, but because we tend to name people our own age, or maybe a little bit older, because they're maybe a little bit more sage.
Wiser,
but,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what happens if they don't outlive us?
So. Well, and one of the things, one of the pushbacks I get all the time, Bob, when I'm saying, you know, it's time to go down a rung in the family tree here, it's so hard sometimes to look at your younger generation as competent adults. They're kids, right? I had one guy in his mid-80s, and he was a real type A, and his adult kids were working with him in this family-owned business, and I kept gently and then less gently pushing him to do these documents. And I said, I'm not really sure why you're not naming your 60-year-old son here. And he goes, oh, yeah, but if you knew him when he was a kid, And I said, but he's not a kid, you know. That's right. I didn't know him. Come on. That's not an excuse anymore. And kind of had to take him by the hand. So sometimes it's very natural to push this off. But when an incapacity can last 10, 15, 20 years, you really don't want a court appointing a professional who's going to have to charge professional fees, or a court to appoint your closest kin who you know is absolutely the wrong person to make decisions for you.
Okay, I don't want to put you on the spot here. Give me an example of your toughest challenge in doing this with just one person and how you succeeded.
I think the toughest challenge was somebody who was diagnosed with sort of a brain disorder, and it was causing them to have difficulty paying attention. So it could have been a chronic, I've had variations on this. One was brain cancer, one was chronic fatigue, and another one was probably a lesser known progressive illness. But in all cases, no documentations had been done ahead of time. I'm getting them as clients when the diagnosis is already there, and they can't follow a paragraph of information. And it was a brilliant PhD economist, literally holding his head and crying because he used to understand everything. He just understood the first thing I said, and now he's already lost it when I'm trying to get to point two. And it's really gut-wrenching. But it's still possible to get through it. So I called a neurologist and said, how do I work with these people? And I called I said, I need you to bring somebody to every meeting, and we're going to write it down. And we're just going to do this until you have enough trust in this process to get the documents done and the authority handed to somebody I can now work with. It takes a lot of time.
Wow. You've got some very good information for people to listen to should they call, and they should. 202-465-3080. We're here with Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner of well over 30 years, former chair of the Certified Financial Planning Board of Standards. And you showed me something before we went on air, and and please, listeners, this is not self-serving. This is really good, but it was a statistical kind of outline from the Certified Financial Planners Board. And tell me about this, because
it was really interesting. As you mentioned, I'm a former chair of the CFP board, so I'm obviously really proud of the work that they're doing. But they did a survey of certified financial planners, and they were just trying to find out if any of us had ever heard of any financial abuse. So we were looking for something very specific. Have you ever heard of a senior citizen who had been sold the wrong thing or being taken advantage of in a situation? And the numbers were staggering, Bob. But it was the one that really killed me was nearly 74% of all certified financial planners who responded to the survey were aware of older investors who'd been offered an unsuitable financial product. Almost 60% of us were aware of older investors who had been subject to the omission of material facts when it came time to making a decision. So, you know, coupled with the fact that we do become more trusting as we age, the room for mischief going on for seniors who aren't necessarily at a stage of life where they have to have somebody come in and take care of them or even make all of their financial decisions, but it's just overwhelming. So as in response to that survey, the CFP board has put out a free book called Financial Self-Defense for Seniors, and it really just goes through some red flags. So if you yourself are a retired person and you're trying to make a decision about where your money belongs or whether an investment is appropriate for you, a little checklist of things, you know, kind of if it's too good to be true, but really if you don't understand it, don't buy it. You should be able to understand anything that you buy. Just red flags to help you personally or somebody who may have to step in and make some decision for you, avoid financial missteps. So the CFP board's website is a good place to look. You can download the workbook that they did for free, or you can go online and just get a digital copy. It's really something any senior should need.
And the website address is?
CFPBoard.net, www. So it's a pretty easy website to remember.
Okay, good. And again, we're here, 202-465-3080. Now, Karen, I haven't asked you how to get in touch with you.
Oh, I'm in Rockville, Maryland. Schaefer is one of those names that can be spelled every different way. So I've married into the family that spells it with every letter available, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R. And you can Google us, and we have a website, Schaefer Financial. Any Schaefers doing financial planning in Rockville, you're probably going to find us.
Great. Great. All righty. This two-page...
Yeah.
What else is on there? I mean, you and I went over before the show, and we touched on the one thing. What else comes out of this? I like what you said. 74% were buying things maybe they shouldn't?
Exactly right. I just met somebody at one of our NITP seminars, and her husband, a Fed, had just retired and moved an $800,000 thrift savings plan into a traditional IRA, something that I think is a great idea. And inside that traditional IRA, purchased a variable annuity, something I think is probably inappropriate for certainly everybody I've met in my career. And the fee on that, the annual fee is 1.75% a year.
A year?
A year. Do the math on that. 800,000 times 1.75% plus... When the market goes up, they keep half of the growth, the insurance company.
We're in the wrong business.
We're in the wrong. I said,
course,
I would have taken
it.
I would have taken
that.
No, really. And when the market goes down, you don't lose. Okay. Did anybody show you what over even the last 10 years when we had a recession, what that would have meant? And she just looked at me like I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong. But again, if they would have read this guidelines on, that sounds a little too good to be true, or do you really understand the fees, they never would have
bought
it. Real
quickie, and then we got a phone call.
Okay.
If they were to cancel the annuity, would the cost be less up front than it would be over the years?
You actually have a little window of time with any insurance product to say, you know what, just kidding, let me out of this. And you certainly have a wider window of opportunity if there was any reason to believe that material facts were not disclosed.
Would that vary by state?
It does. You know, insurance laws are all state by state.
Okay, that's what I thought. But anyway, yep. We have a caller, and we don't want them to hang up. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call. It's not quite on topic, but close, I hope. We're getting ready to retire federal government and have that last youngster coming off of 26 and under. Mm-hmm. They do not want to take insurance, can't find insurance, can't feel they afford insurance. And I wish to know if you have any guidance for how to... deal with that, and certainly it would come back to us should anything happen.
Well, yes and no. It doesn't come back to you legally. It comes back to you as a practical matter. I'm going to agree with you on that, that if I've got an adult child who is underinsured or uninsured from a healthcare point of view and they need good healthcare, of course, I'm a parent, I'm going to pay. Now, I would never say that to my children. So if you're listening, children, just kidding. But he's an adult and he needs to know the consequences and the risk that he's putting the entire family at by not having health insurance. We're a family. So I would definitely get in the let's make a deal mode with my adult child and say, what do you think you can afford? You're putting me and my retirement at risk. What do you think you can afford? And then also, part of the problem here is that most 26-year-olds don't know how to shop for health insurance. Most adults don't know how to shop for health insurance. So let's try to find... and again, it's going to be state by state, but let's try to find somebody, an insurance broker, financial planner, even consumer advocacy groups that can take us by the hand as the adults in the family to then steer our pseudo-adult child to making a smarter decision here. And I would go so far as to backstop it a little bit with my own cash because I don't want to be put at personal risk.
Thank you. Do you have any resources you recommend off the top that we could have them start doing the due diligence?
Where do they live?
Maryland.
Yeah, in the state of Maryland. If you want to contact me through the NITP website, I can get you a couple resources. I actually rely heavily on an independent insurance broker who can stay up on it, and I'd be happy to pass that along to you.
And the NITP website is pretty simple, NITPINC.com.
Thank you so much. So
yeah.
Helpful.
No, very good question.
Okay, good. We're on a roll. 202-465-3080. So, and as you can see, we can take the questions directly or indirectly on the subject matter. I like the one comment you made that maybe the younger child is unemployed or can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And it'd be best to be underwritten by mom and dad rather than mom and dad having to pay for something a lot.
You know, in life, these I call these our risk management decisions. And that's just a risk to my retirement. If I'm going to have a child who is so underinsured that it could come back to me. I remember getting on an airplane once, and you know the unspoken rule in airplanes, if you don't make eye contact with the person sitting next to you, you don't have to talk to them. And so I settled into my seat, and I had my good book that I was going to read, and this guy had to talk. I mean, he just broke all the rules, and he was so upset. He was coming back from visiting his adult son, who was self-employed, and he had wrenched his knee, and long story short, he was going to have major knee surgery, and he didn't have health insurance, and he had two young kids, and the dad is now $30,000-$40,000 into taking care of the knee and the family, and he was just railing against health insurance in this country. And I said, why didn't you just pay for some health insurance premiums for your son? And dead silence. It had never occurred to him that that would have been a way better strategy for handling this than hoping a young man doing construction doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. So, you know, he changed seats to sit next to you.
I'm sure he did.
So it was worth the upcharge.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah. But we just have to admit, this is risk management. You know, if you can move no forwarding address, God love you. But, you know, if these are your kids, they're going to be your kids. And so be honest about how you would feel if they really were going to be permanently injured by the bad knee. I think you're going to step in and get them the Beth Orthopede in town and get them healed.
Okay, how do we get to people? You and I are in the business, so mm-hmm. we understand that we should have some kind of protective envelope around our assets. But how do we get to somebody maybe like us that I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be fine for the rest of my life. And, you know, how about mom and dad? Were they fine? Well, not exactly. How do you get them to the table?
Well, Bob, you know, how to get anybody to the table? We're all a little bit different. I've had success occasionally scaring people with horror stories. I've had success with, you know, slowly but surely turning a corner. Some people need to feel it's their own idea. So you bring it up a few times and they've got enough of an idea of how things work. And then they can bring it back in and say, hey, is there any way I might be able to handle? Yes, this is how we're going to do it. I don't think that we should be looking for a magic one size fits all strategy for how to deal with people. I think we need to focus on what needs to get done here. Where is the risk? And the risk is somebody might have to make financial decisions for me. And it could be any old buddy assigned to make those decisions who may not know me. It may be somebody who I really don't like, who the way they make financial decisions. Or it may be somebody who's just not in a good place to make decisions, where it's going to be too tempting for them to see my money is their money. And they mean to get it all back to me. But then when I really need round-the-clock care, I can't afford it because somebody was a little sloppy with earlier decision making. So the goal is everybody needs a durable power of attorney for financial matters. Many people need revocable living trusts. Everybody needs to get them done while we're healthy and it seems like a waste of time and money. And people need to talk about it. That's a universal advice.
Okay. There's a computer program, much like there is one for TurboTax or the HR block to do mm-hmm. tax returns. There's a computer program that will do wills. And we're not advocating this, but some people just can't help themselves. They're going to do that. I don't know because I've never looked at it. Truth of the matter is I've never looked at TurboTax. but the point being is after listening to this show, that should be on the shopping list of the thing that should be in there, which I'd imagine that it is.
Oh,
and
sure.
Second, somebody's got to call it up and Shouldn't somebody look over their shoulder after all this is done?
I always say if there's a non-lawyer who probably has the experience to draft a will, it would be me, because I taught estate planning at George Washington University for financial professionals for a dozen years. It's a topic that I'm sort of interested in, and I have copies of documents from every client who we, you know, kind of insist we can't do much of a financial plan without this fundamental document in place. I learned something very valuable by having a lawyer draft my will. So there's something about the academic world, there's something about legal language that you just can't know it all. And so if somebody with my experience and tools abounding benefited from a lawyer, I think anybody's going to benefit from a lawyer. The way I feel about the one-size-fits-all, valid-in-all-50-state software packages is that's better than nothing. And it's certainly better than, it's a great way to get you organized. So if you are, you do have that inquisitive, need to know everything mind, this is a great starting point for then having the lawyer meeting who then says, yep, I like all of this, or this is very good. Now I'm going to put it in my language because I know in the state of Maryland, we're starting to see pressures this way or that way. I had a simple little thing. If you have minor children, who should be guardian of your children? My husband, Rick, and I, pretty like-minded when it comes to financial decisions, named our first and second choices. And the lawyer, without even looking up, said, and if Donna and John divorce, who should continue to be the guardian? I never thought of that. I'd never seen that written down. I'd never seen any example. But hello, that's a pretty big common sense deal. It should be Donna. don't get me wrong, John, you're a great guy, but that was just a brilliant common sense. And if I've got one example like that, Bob, I've got a gazillion of them. So yeah, we want good lawyers to draft it, but using these different software packages to get yourself organized, sure, I'm happy about that. That's better than nothing.
I like your comment. You even went to one. Went to one. I had no idea. What about this one? Well, what happens if that one? And what about the special chair? Who does that go to?
And they go through all of the what ifs. The other thing that's great about a properly drafted set of documents is, in spite of the fact that we've had massive tax law changes in estate tax limits in the last decade or so, in spite of the fact that on a personal level, my family's very different today than it was. I have my balance sheet's a little different. I haven't had to change my documents. I just find that brilliant and really, really worth paying for. So I think lawyers are going to be very happy to hear that.
All righty. Going forward, do you see anything in the landscape with regards to proposed changes in laws that would, we're beginning more laws where, you should do this. Would there ever be any requirement that somebody, I don't know how they could legislate, you should have somebody look at your will?
For today's topic, I'm less concerned about the will and more concerned about these planning for incapacity documents, the powers of attorney and the healthcare directives. What we are kicking around, and it just keeps going around and around, is this notion of fiduciary standard. If I'm going to give you advice, I should have to put your interests before mine. And where the line gets blurry is when we go back to this process, this whole financial product sales thing. I'm a salesperson. You came in to buy something from me. I shouldn't have to be held to a fiduciary standard. I got what you want. You walk out, you're happy. But this is where the problem is, right? This is where the mischief is. So we do see lots of proposals about that. You can keep up with the legislation if I send you back to that CFP board website on who's got what proposals out there. After the banking crisis in 2008, a whole new agency has been developed and is up and running to protect consumers, and they're trying to get sort of the lay of the land, and they're reaching out to get feedback. So this is clearly a movement that's gaining some ground, but whether we're really going to get legislation and whether that legislation is going to be effective. You just need to stay tuned.
Okay, I'm going to touch a hot button or maybe the third rail.
Uh-oh.
I go in and I say, I'm an accountant. I know how to do present, future values and whatnot. I don't know that I need a survivor's annuity. I want to receive a greater annuity, and I'm going to take the difference and buy life insurance. Forget all the tax ramifications and all that. That's a hot button, I think, with your industry.
Well, it's certainly a hot button with me personally, because as somebody who got a life insurance license in the late 70s and became a certified financial planner that required me to put my clients' interests first and take that fiduciary responsibility, I have never, ever seen a situation where I would even consider recommending that somebody tell their spouse to waive their rights to a survivor benefit and buy some life insurance instead. I've seen a couple, and literally it's a couple, situations where somebody really didn't need the survivor benefit. My spouse is wealthy in his own right. He can waive his rights to my survivor benefit, still be financially comfortable, might want to keep a little bit of my survivor benefit so that he's eligible for the health insurance. But what we see is federal agencies actually allowing insurance agents to come in and do free seminars in federal agencies, seeming to be approved, with this notion that get your spouse to waive their rights to the survivor benefit, buy insurance instead. The numbers don't work, and you just can't figure it out as a layperson because there's no full disclosure requirement on just how much commission is in this or how inadequate the amount of insurance you're really buying is compared to the value of a survivor benefit. Just don't get me started, okay? Hate this topic.
Yeah, we're done with that one.
Yeah. Don't do it.
Where do we go next?
Makes me crazy.
You picked a topic. In looking at advising, let's look at the elder, the person just retired, and they come in and say, Karen, I don't know about asset allocation, and I don't know about this. What do you look for? What little I do with this, I said, you got to know where your money's going first before you can ask what to do with it second. How much do you need to live on? And then after that, what do I do?
Right. So that is probably the first question anybody who's going to do some investing has to understand is what do we need this money to do? There's a really different kind of asset allocation we would come up with if somebody has routine needs from this money. Every month we need to be producing $1,000 out of this pot of money. And how long might we need to do that? That's going to be really different asset allocation than I don't need it month to month. I might not even need it year to year. But if I were to have to buy a car and do some home maintenance or take a nice trip, I'm probably going to this pot of money. Or if, as I age, I want to have care in my own home, which can be huge and big ticket, I need this money, I'm going to come up with a completely different portfolio structure. So it really is all about when do you need the money back or what do we need to have this money do? It's about time frames. And then we make a big deal about money that we might need in the short term, maybe next 5 years, and money that we don't need for at least 5 years. Best we can tell without being psychic, but with some planning tools. Once we get that kind of clarity, then we can start putting a little personality into it. I love this. I hate this. This makes me happy. This makes me nervous. We can start designing portfolios around your personal preferences a bit, but it's all about the time frames.
Okay. And then this again keys into our topic. For years, I heard, what was it, the 3% rule or the 4% rule? But wasn't that a variable depending on when you retired or when you started to take the money out?
Well, what you really mean by that is if I spend at this rate, I should have good odds my money will last 30-some years, all right? Since the average federal government employee separates from service with 30-plus years life expectancy, what's the reasonable spend-down rate? If I want my last check to bounce, but I don't want it to bounce too soon. And so we did say it was about a 4% rule, and it still is. But the problem is 4% implies you're taking some market risk with your money, and you can't take that 4% out as a young retiree when the market's down. So it's sort of an on average 4%. It's a litmus test. It tells you, you better keep working and make a bigger pot of money, or you know what? You're good to go. You're just working because you like it. But it still requires us to every single year as retirees, especially young retirees, be a little careful about how we're spending the money.
Okay, and that's another way to look at if we were looking at what folks are doing.
Oh, yeah.
And say, you're spending 5% or 6%. Well, this is, you know, it's going to last. Market's good.
This is unsustainable.
And,
yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I've noticed with most of my clients as they get older is that where we might have had a rational conversation early on about what's an appropriate amount of risk, a sign that that conversation, that their attitude toward that has changed is usually a sign where I want to start bringing in the other kids. And it can go either way. It can be just irrationally risk adverse to the point of sell it now, put it under the mattress to, what do you mean commodities, futures, funds are risky? I like them. You know, that's when I'm really glad I've asked the question. So, would I ever have permission to call your daughter? Right. That yeah. attitude towards risk just changed like a light switch. No. That's a sign something's wrong.
Yeah. This tax season, just three cases came up and it just floored me. And I don't say that. I don't usually say that.
Yeah.
Somebody very good with the money just lost it. Other ones hiding the fact from their spouse too afraid to ask, or one just lost it and totally lost it, and then the other spouse was stuck there with hardly knew how to write a check. Would call me up, but they were out of state, and we finally found somebody to handle it in where they lived.
Right.
Anyway, this has been great. We're heading down to the final minute. Andrew's saying, okay, you got another minute. Hurry up, Bob. Karen, final comments?
Final comments. I just want to encourage people to do this. This is something that you may not have learned how to do from your parents because people really didn't live this long before. And people used to retire with pretty simple circumstances. And it was easy to handle. Our circumstances are more complicated, and it's really critical you get some good documents and good conversation in place. So if the first attempt to talk to mom and dad doesn't work, try it again and lead by example. Do yourself first.
Well, we're going to follow your example and re-listen to this show. Thanks for being here, and please tune in next week. But this was good. This is a repeater.
All right. Well, that it was my pleasure, Bob. Thanks
so
much.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Andrew.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.